Take your Bibles and turn to Numbers chapter 16, part of our reading this week. Passed out some paper to most of you before services tonight. Just a little scrap piece of paper. You might want to write a note or two. I kind of want to conduct this as a class, but I don't really want your comments yet. But when we get to the end, you know, I'd kind of like us to think about some lessons learned through this text, through this chapter. And so you might want to write some down. We're looking for just kind of some short answers, short discussion. Lessons learned. What are some things when we come away from this chapter, what do we just need to know? What need we have learned when we come through this? So we get to chapter 16 of Numbers, and we are dealing with the rebellion of Korah. Well, the rebellion of Korah is not new among the children of Israel. Korah has more or less come on the scene now. But with the children of Israel, we have already seen that there is a problem. It's a real attitude problem. I mean, we think about in chapter 12, you know, it was Miriam and Aaron who opposed Moses, their brother, the one chosen of God. And a little hard for me to grasp that. I mean, they should have known and understood God's place and purpose for Moses, but they were jealous. They were jealous and they rebelled. Didn't work out real well for Miriam, remember? You know, there for a while. Chapter 13, the exploring of the promised land. 10 of the 12 spies come back saying, oh no, we can't go. It's the people are too strong. And then there was this rebellion that came up, you know, out of that. You know, there was, you know, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Can you remember? Can you imagine? I mean, they were rejecting Moses, you know, as their leader there. And so God at that point in chapter 14, well, he was ready to be finished with them. He was ready to just turn and desert them. And the lesson that was coming out of that chapter really is that, you know, you don't rebel against the Lord. That's just not right. That's not good. We don't need to rebel against the Lord. And so in verse 11 of chapter 14, God was ready to destroy them. You know, it was only on behalf of Moses, his prayers, his concerns for them, that God spared them. Oh, there was a punishment, just consequences. 40 years in the wilderness is what was coming. And then after that, some tried to go on up into the Canaan. Remember, Moses tried to stop them, you know, but they were intent. They were going to go. That didn't go well. And they were routed back. And just a few examples. I mean, here's the attitude now of the children of Israel. I mean, everything that doesn't go exactly the way they think it should go, they're upset. In chapter 16, there's a number that stand up now against Moses. And there's a ringleader, Korah. Have you noticed there always is? A ringleader, that is. There just always seems to be someone that riles up the rest. It doesn't have to be a whole group that riles up the group. Just one sometimes can do that. On the playground at school, it worked that way. I wasn't the one that riled everybody up. No, I wasn't that one. Earl Metcalf might have been that one. All right. But I wasn't that one. And it only takes one. Korah. In chapter 16, it's Korah who does that. Now, he's not alone. But Korah was the one that really got some things moving and some things going again. So now we're looking at rebellion again. And Korah, and Dathan, Abiram, and On, these were some of the ones that were just involved in this. And there's about 250 others that have joined together, you know, in this. Well-known members of the council. Korah was a Levite. And so we have a little bit of insight, and Dathan and Abiram were of the tribe of Reuben. I mean, they're not even a Levite. Remember, Levites had certain responsibilities and privileges with regard to serving the Lord. And remember that all priests were Levites, but all Levites were not priests. It was Aaron and his sons who were the priests. And they had particular responsibility. Now, when it comes to the Levites, they had responsibility with regard to the tabernacle, putting it up, taking it down, carrying it one place to another, moving the furniture of the tabernacle. That's all Levites had that responsibility. But Aaron and his sons had the particular responsibility of doing such things as offering sacrifices as that would come and burning incense. That was given to Aaron and his sons, not to all Levites. Only the priest offered this incense before the Lord. And so there's this rebellion then that comes up, rises up against Moses, chapter 16. Now, you don't have to be writing all this stuff down up here on the overhead. Don't try to write all that down. Just start, when we're going through, what are some lessons learned? What are some things we need to pull away from this lesson? Chapter 16. Korah, son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and certain Reubenites, Dathan, Abiram, sons of Eliab, and On, son of Peleth, became insolent, and they rose up against Moses. With them were 250 Israelite men, well-known community leaders who had been appointed members of the council. They came as a group to oppose Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far. The whole community is holy and every one of them, and the Lord is with them. Why then do you set yourselves above the Lord's assembly?" When Moses heard this, he fell face down. Then he said to Korah and his followers, "In the morning the Lord will show who belongs to him and who is holy, and he will have that person come near him. The man he chooses he will cause to come near him. You, Korah, and your followers are to do this." Let's stop right there. So their charge against Moses and Aaron: why do you set yourself above the Lord's assembly? Korah and those others are saying, "You're not special. You're no different than us. Everyone here is holy. Everyone here is following the Lord. Everyone here knows the Lord's charge. Who do you think you are?" Here's the charge that's coming from Korah: "You set yourself up above the assembly." And you just think and ask yourself for a moment, who set Moses up before the assembly? Just something to think about. Who set him there? And so, you know, this is the same thing that was heard before, basically, from Aaron and Miriam when they rebelled. They were saying the same kind of thing. Jealousy, remember, was their problem? It was jealousy that was an issue. Jealousy might be something we should recall. And in chapter 14, after exploring the land of Canaan, the issues and the problems that came out of that, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. They didn't have a leader. I thought there was already a chosen leader. But again, there's some that's fighting against that. And so Moses gave Korah these instructions. Where he said, and when Moses heard this, he fell face down, and he said, fell face down. You know, does that sound like someone who's trying to set himself up above others? Moses fell face down, and he said to Korah and all of his followers, verse 5, "In the morning, the Lord will show who belongs to him and who is holy, and he will have that person come near him. The man he chooses will cause to come near him. You, Korah, and all your followers are to do this. Take censers, and tomorrow put fire and incense in them before the Lord. The man the Lord chooses will be the one who is holy. You, Levites, have gone too far." I'm thinking Moses is a little frustrated now. And you know, the time of leading the children of Israel is still very early. We haven't even started that 40 years, really. You know, and the murmuring that's coming from them already is just over the top. Moses gave instructions to Korah. Korah, this is how you will know who it is the Lord chooses, because the Lord is going to call him near. That's what he says. The Lord is going to show who belongs to him. The man the Lord chooses will be the one who is holy, is what he said. And you know, boy, you've gone too far. Remember, it's only the priests who can burn and offer incense. But here's the instructions that he gave. Korah, you and all of those who are found, go get your censer. You know that the censer, that's what they would burn incense in. Go get your censer. Go ahead, go get that. Put fire in it, put incense on it for the Lord. You know, bring that. Bring that. You want to be like a priest? Just act like a priest. Go get your censer, put incense, put fire in it. Bring that. And so, some more instruction. Verse 8. Moses said to Korah, "Now listen, you Levites. Isn't it enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the Israelite community and brought you near himself to do the work at the Lord's tabernacle and to stand before the community and to minister to them? He has brought you and all your fellow Levites near him, but now you are trying to get the priesthood too. It is against the Lord that you and all your followers have banded together. Who is Aaron that you should grumble against him?" Identifies again, Korah, all of you Levites. It was the Levites that had the responsibility to work at the Lord's tabernacle and to stand before the community as ministers of these things. But all priests are Levites, but all Levites are not priests. And so, Moses is saying to Korah and those followers, already the Lord has you standing out, you know, away from the community. You already stand out in your role as a Levite. Already God has chosen you for that. But you're looking for something more. You want something more. And so he's saying, now you listen to me. Moses is saying to them, now you listen to me. Korah was not satisfied still. He wanted something more. I don't know if he looked at Moses and thought, I want to be like Moses. I want to have that relationship with God that Moses has. This is not the way to get it, I can tell you. It was God who chose Moses, remember? God is the one who chose Moses as his leader. And so when Korah is trying to assume some responsibility that hasn't been given to him, or is trying to gather up a following, an insurrection, so to speak, to take over, this is not God's plan. This is Korah's plan. And when someone tries to go against the will of God, never, never is it going to go well. So Moses called Dathan and Abiram to come as well. They weren't even Levites, remember? Somehow they got pulled into this. They were friends with Korah, and they thought what Korah was saying, well, that sounds pretty good to me. They're not even Levites, and they're getting pulled into this. Verse 12, Moses summoned Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. But they said, "We will not come. Isn't it enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the desert? And now you want to lord it over us?" Isn't it interesting that this is not the only time that when a man of God is doing what God would have them to do, some are going to object and say to them, "Well, you're lording it over us." Verse 14, "Moreover, you haven't brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, or given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you gouge out the eyes of these men? No, we will not come." So they're saying they were afraid to come. accusing Moses of doing some physical harm to the ones who he has called and the ones who would come. Look at the way they talk to Moses. I mean, isn't that troubling? The chosen one of God. And they speak to him with such venom and hatred and accuse him of things that he would never think of doing. Think about how they are speaking to the man of God. And so there's some more then to the instructions given to Korah. Verse 16, Moses said to Korah, "You and all your followers are to appear before the Lord tomorrow. You and they and Aaron, each man is to take a censer and put incense in it, 250 censers in all, and present it before the Lord. You and Aaron are to present your censers also." So each man took his censer, put fire and incense in it, and stood with Moses and Aaron at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So, okay, so now we have them standing at the tabernacle where these kinds of proceedings would take place, where Aaron would go to burn incense in his censer before the Lord. Korah, 250 other men are there with him, you know, for this event. And it seems like they were anxious to do so. There was no second call. Remember that you all need to come. They were there. It was the day before, Moses said, tomorrow. So here they are. They are ready to go. They thought that they were getting what they deserved. Now they're getting the respect that they deserved. Well, indeed, they are getting what they deserve. That's coming. And God appeared in His glory as He would come to the tent of meeting. Verse 19. When Korah had gathered all his followers in opposition to them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, the glory of the Lord appeared to the entire assembly. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Separate yourselves from this assembly so I can put an end to them at once." But Moses and Aaron fell face down and cried out, "O God, God of the spirits of all mankind, will you be angry with the entire assembly when only one man sins?" Again, it's Moses and Aaron this time as well, pleading for the people. And you try to imagine the scene, the tent of meeting, God's presence as it is made there, Korah and these men with their censers, incense burning, and the presence of God is there. And God says, "Get away from them." God is ready to destroy. God has already been at the point ready to destroy all of Israel. His anger is just overflowing with Israel. This is just another case, another opportunity. And so Moses, again, and with Aaron too, is the one who has prayed for them over and over. Moses has been the one already who intercedes on their behalf, intercedes for them because of their sins. And here again, he's doing that. Move away from them. Verse 23. Then Moses, or the Lord said to Moses, "Say to the assembly, move away from the tents of Korah and Dathan and Abiram." And Moses got up and went to Dathan and Abiram and to the elders of Israel, and the elders of Israel followed him, and he warned the assembly, "Move back from the tents of these wicked men. Do not touch anything belonging to them, or you will be swept away because of all of their sins." So they moved away from the tents of Korah and Dathan and Abiram. Dathan and Abiram had come out and were standing with their wives, their children, and little ones at the entrances to their tents. You see how they have their families involved here too. It's so often that when there's some kind of an insurrection kind of a thing, it's not just one member of the family so often. I mean, fathers, we have influence with our families. Hopefully, we have influence with our families, which can be for good or it can be for bad. And here, these men certainly had influence with their families. Their families, they're standing there with them, you know, at their tents. But the problem, the issue is to stand with them, is to be in their sin, to give them support in their sin, is to condone their sin. And that's what's happening. And Moses said, do not touch them. Do not touch what belongs to them. Stay away from those in sin. Get away from them is what Moses is saying. And there's judgment that's going to come in an incredible way, a very real, immediate judgment that would take place. Verse 28. Then Moses said, this is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these things and that it was not my idea. If these men die a natural death and experience only what happens to men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about something totally new, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up, and everything that belongs to them, then they go down alive into the grave, then you will know that these men have treated the Lord with contempt. It'll be said later in the book of Deuteronomy. Well, perhaps it's already been said. It's recorded later in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 18. How do you know if a prophet is from God? Well, if the things he prophesies comes true. That's what Moses is saying here. If something you've never seen before happens, such as if the earth were to open up and swallow these men and everything that they belong, and swallow them alive into the earth, then you will know that I am the one sent by God. I wonder what some were thinking at this point. I mean, maybe there are some who are thinking, well, we know that God has sent Moses. There were those. But we also know that there were those who did not look at Moses as being the one sent by God. What were they thinking? They wouldn't have time to think about it very long. Verse 31. And as soon as he finished saying all of this, the ground under them split apart and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them with their household and all Korah's men and all their possessions. They went down alive into the grave with everything they owned. The earth closed over them and they perished and were gone from the community. At their cries, all the Israelites around them fled, shouting, the earth is going to swallow us too. It's a scene that's hard to grasp. Trying to imagine the earth opening up in such a way and swallowing those people. It didn't swallow everyone. It wasn't indiscriminate what happened. It was by God's choice. Those who got swallowed up when the earth opened up. Korah and his men, Dathan and Abiram, their families were swallowed up by the earth. And you just have to try to imagine that scene. And the judgment of God continues in verse 35. And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. The Lord said to Moses, tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to take the censers out of the smoldering remains and scatter the coals some distance away. For the censers are holy. The censers of the men who sinned at the cost of their lives. Hammer the censers into sheets to overlay the altar, for they were presented before the Lord and have become holy. Let them be a sign to the Israelites. So Eleazar the priest collected the bronze censers brought by those who had been burned up, and he had them hammered out to overlay the altar as the Lord directed him through Moses. This was to remind the Israelites that no one except a descendant of Aaron should come to burn incense before the Lord, or he would become like Korah and his followers. Remember what Moses said? This is how you will know that the Lord has sent me. The Lord has spoken now. The 250 would-be priests, they are no more. Their censers being gathered up and beaten into sheets to overlay the altar so that it would be a continual reminder of the event that just took place. And it confirms, this whole episode confirmed that Moses was the chosen leader of Israel. Moses was the true mediator for Israel, the one to intercede for them. And you think now it's like, okay, so they've had two or three episodes here just real close together where Israel was foolish and they did just some incredibly bad things. Whew. Boy, I'm glad they learned their lesson. Verse 41. The next day, the whole Israelite community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. You have killed the Lord's people, they said. I'm going like, are you kidding me? The next day, I mean, it wasn't a week, a month later, a year later, they freaking, the next day. But when the assembly gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron and turned toward the tent of meeting, suddenly the cloud covered and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron went to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord said to Moses, get away from this assembly so I can put an end to them at once. And they fell face down. Then Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put incense in it along with fire from the altar and hurry to the assembly to make atonement for them. Wrath has come out from the Lord. The plague has started. So Aaron did as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. The plague had already started among the people, but Aaron offered the incense and made atonement for them. And he stood between the living and the dead, and the plague stopped. But 14,700 people died in the plague, in addition to those who had died because of Korah. Then Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting, for the plague had stopped. I'll have to admit at times that I'm not real fast to learn lessons. Sometimes it's taken me what seems to be an unreasonable amount of time to learn some lessons. But I really hope I'm a little bit sharper than what these people have been. It just amazes me. The rebellion against Moses, remember, the rebellion against Moses is not really a rebellion against Moses. In the big picture now, when they rebel against Moses, who are they rebelling against? Against God. Why is it a rebellion against God?
Because God chose Moses.
God chose Moses. God put him in this place and in this position. God called him. God made Moses his mediator, his intercessor between him and the people. And God made that so very clear. We go back to Mount Sinai. I'm not sure how any could not understand that Moses was the chosen vessel of God. You think about Exodus 19 and some of those passages through Exodus, how very clear that should be. We need to understand when we look at stories like this, these Bible stories are given to us from God for great purpose so that we can understand God's reasons for the anger that he has displayed and understand his disappointment. There might be some lessons learned that we can think of through Numbers chapter 16. I'd like to know what are some of the takeaways that you have. When you look at Numbers chapter 16, what are some lessons learned?
Rebellion against God never ends well.
It's never going to end well for us. Rebellion against God is never going to end well for us. What is the bigger picture of that we have got to understand? Is the earth going to swallow us up? I don't think it's going to be like what happened to Korah and the earth swallow us up. In the end, what is going to happen when we rebel against God? God always has the last say. And again, at judgment, there is going to be the last say. It'll never end well for those who rebel against God. Neil, would you put your hand up?
Just thinking, a lot of people today will use the term my God. We don't define God. They were trying to define God.
You're right. They're trying to define God, who He is, what God wanted. They were trying to mold God into the image they wanted Him to be. Yeah, what God ought to do. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. What else?
They were really rebelling against God's word because He had stipulated already who the priests were, who was supposed to be doing what, and
right.
made these distinctions.
Right.
And they knew those, that they had heard this.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah, this was a rebellion against God's word. He had already made these things clear. It was not as though there was a lack of ability to understand what God said. Have you noticed God is always very clear? I mean, when it's something that we have to know and we have to understand, here's what we should do. God has always made Himself very clear, as in this case too. That's right. Good point. What else? Earl. Oh, not a good idea to follow rebels. You know, it kind of seemed like they were getting quite a number there, Earl. It wasn't just Korah. I mean, there was these others. I mean, these others come even outside of the tribe of Levi.
Well, it said, I don't know if it's literal, but it said Korah had assembled all the congregation against Moses.
Yes. So, I mean, I get the picture that all had come. I mean, we're all in the same boat with Korah and the rest of them. I don't know about that because they weren't all swallowed up, you know. But there was enough interest where all had come, you know, that the ones who had sinned in the greatest way before God, God made judgment against them. That was immediate. But we get the picture with that, just how far the influence had spread, that the whole assembly had come.
Jennifer. Pride is a dangerous thing. Pride goes before fall.
Pride is a dangerous thing. Yeah, several, I think several. Yeah, everybody's going, yeah, that's, well, we see pride is a dangerous thing. Jealousy. Someone else has something that we want, or someone is in a position. This has a lot to do about position. I don't know if it had anything to do much about wealth necessarily, but position. I mean, Moses was the one that everybody turned to and looked to. He was the one who was leading. He was the one God spoke to. You know, boy, position can be a horrible thing sometimes. You know, it can work well. And it can work not well, depending very much on the one who is in position or authority.
Well, this reminds me of Jesus and the Pharisees. Mm. Because it says they delivered Him up because of envy. And it was their pride that kept them from believing in Him and trusting Him.
Absolutely. Right. That's right. They didn't want to accept His authority. They didn't want to accept His position. You know, while we're on that line of thought right there, transition that some to the Lord's church. What can happen in the Lord's church in that regard?
They can follow one person.
Several things come up. One person can cause a lot of problems in a church. One person can stir up a lot of problems. What else? One person can split the church, sure. What's that? Mm-hmm. Make a transition or a parallel with Moses, the chosen one of God, to lead the people, the children of Israel. Rick brings up the idea of Jesus being the chosen one of God, the mediator, the intercessor, you know, for the people of God. Many of the Jews rejected Him. transition that further into the church.
I think this is just, who was it that loved the preeminence?
Diotrephes.
Diotrephes. And is it John first or
third John? Third John.
John.
Mm-hmm. All it takes is one person that can cause to bring about an insurrection. You know, some of the most difficult issues I had to deal with in the church was basically a rebellion against the elders. The elders had to do some things and make some judgments against some. A small number in the church that we'll just say were not who they should be. They were not who they portrayed themselves to be. And what should have been, very simply, what should have been a situation where the church rallied and followed the lead of the elders didn't work that way. Because that small insurrection had power and influence with some others who were confused on the situation and the matter. But even if they were confused, it could have been resolved so much easier if when the elders said, you know, we need you to listen. We need you to follow. If they had just followed. That's all they had to do. That's all they had to do. But they didn't. And there was a great deal of problem and pain that came. You think about, and this is not an exact parallel, but it does kind of work. When you think in the church, a church that has elders who are serving to lead as shepherds, they are God's chosen leaders for that local church. God is the one who instituted elders as leaders in a church. And if they are men that are put in position because they have demonstrated good judgment and godliness, when issues and problems come up, then they need to be followed so problems can be worked through. Here Moses, in a very dramatic way, was the one who was chosen and identified as the leader of God's people. And just think, time and again, if when Moses spoke, if they had just listened and followed and obeyed the direction that he was giving them, how different this book would be. Just how different it would be. Neil and Kathy.
The insurrection, once you realize how many people were going through motions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're Jews. In name, are you Jews in heart?
Mm-hmm.
The question we have to ask ourselves.
That's right.
We can claim all we want to, but actions speak louder than words. Those actions said, no, we are not the children of God because we're not acting like the children.
What I'm hoping, one thing we can see as we look at these lessons learned, it's easy when we look at the children of Israel and some of the problems that they were having to think, well, what was wrong with them? On about every kind of example or lesson learned that we bring up about them, we can probably make some kind of parallel in our lives today or even on a church level on how churches need to deal with some things. There's parallels that are just very strong, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. They trust.
Yeah.
What Moses was bringing to them.
That's it. And trust first that goes to the Lord,
exactly.
To know, to understand His plan, and then viewing Moses as that mediator for them, trusting what Moses said, knowing that God spoke directly to Moses. You know, why there would be anyone unwilling to follow Moses is just hard to understand.
Another thing we learn is that, and we've seen it with Nadab and Abihu, we've seen it now with Korah and his rebellious friends.
Mm-hmm.
God doesn't accept the burning of all incense.
Mm-hmm.
And as it would apply to us today, God doesn't accept all worship.
Yeah, that's right. God does not accept all worship. Whatever we think Whatever we just come up with and think to be good worship, acceptable to God, does not make it acceptable to Him. God is the one that dictates what the worship should be. That's another parallel to us today. Exactly. Good thoughts. What else? Here they are crying about wanting to go back to Egypt. And even as it was described here, back to Egypt, to that land flowing with milk and honey. They're describing Egypt that way? Where they were slaves? They were making bricks? You know, they were being burdened and they were being beaten. And that was the land of milk and honey? And said to Moses, "You've not delivered us to a land of milk and honey." Well, he tried. But they went into that land of milk and honey, which they came back. It's beautiful. The food is great. It's, you know, everything is beautiful. Oh, but we can't go there. We can't make it. I mean, Moses had taken them to the doorstep of the land flowing with milk and honey. And now they're looking at Egypt. Oh, that, I can't even grasp that.
The parallel to that for us is when we were in sin before we became Christian, we were in spiritual Egypt. We were slaves.
Yes, in bondage.
And Christ has freed us from that, but too many times Christians look back with a longing eye. They want to go back to Egypt, so to speak. They want to go back to enjoying some of the sinful things they did when they were Christians, not realizing the slavery and the bondage that they were in.
The angels told Lot and his family, "Don't look back." But Lot's wife looked back and turned into a pillar of stone. Don't look back. And Israel was still looking back at Egypt. There was nothing there to look back at in a glowing way. But they had so lost their focus and direction of what God was trying to accomplished with them that they were so lost. One other thing I'll throw out real quick. You know, you remember that as they were standing out by their tents with their families. What application can be made here, fathers? What application can be made that we need to think about leading our family? What are some applications of that?
If we do a poor job, there can be some very serious adverse consequences for our family.
If we go the way of Satan, we may take our family right with us. I mean, that's just a sobering picture to me. That's just a sobering picture. There's probably some more things we can think of, some more thoughts or application that we might try to glean. But I think we've got the point. It's a powerful, powerful chapter. And it gives us an incredible insight as to where we are right now as we're reading through the history of the children of Israel, just where their mind was at or where did it need to be. It wasn't where it needed to be. But it gives us some insight. And I hope some application that's helpful to us. I'm glad you're here tonight. We're going to sing a song here as we close that we can use as well as a song to encourage anyone who needs to respond to the gospel, who needs the prayers of the church. We'd be happy to help you in any way we can. Would you come as we stand and sing?